Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. At the end of his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, Immanuel Kant has this section, Solution of the General Question of the Prolegomena, and the general question is, how is metaphysics possible as science, as Wissenschaft, as a rigorous, systematic body of knowledge that can be developed by the rational being, namely us? Now, he's going to begin this section by noting something quite interesting. So he says that metaphysics as a natural disposition, a Naturanlage of human reason, which he's discussed earlier in the third part of the Prolegomena, which is devoted to metaphysics, is actual. It is wirklich. Now, this is a German term which can be translated as actual or real, meaning that there are things out there in history and in Kant's own present that are calling themselves metaphysics. And he gives a number of different examples of this in that section. So there are people doing metaphysics, thinking they're engaging in metaphysics, reading and writing books on metaphysics, having classes on it. So there's that aspect, right? There's something that's called, or some things that are called metaphysics. And then he goes on and he says, but if considered by itself alone, für sich allein, and he doesn't actually say considered there, he just says for itself, it is dialectical and illusory. So this is talking about the metaphysics that is out there that is actual. It's not as if there's actual metaphysics and then there's dialectical and illusory metaphysics. These are two different ways of looking at things. One goes to the library or sits in on university lectures, or in our time, maybe, you know, type some things into Google to do a search term and says, well, there's metaphysics there. The other is what Kant has revealed to us throughout the Critique of Pure Reason, but also this Prolegomena, that those claimants to metaphysics are in fact dialectical and illusory. And we saw earlier that it's difficult to not do metaphysics because we do have this natural disposition, this tendency to want to go beyond the boundaries of mere experience. But there is some hope here, right? So he says, if we think of taking principles from metaphysics and in using them follow the natural, but on that account no less false illusion, we can never produce science, but only a vain dialectical art in which one school may outdo one another, but none can ever acquire a just and lasting approbation. So he goes on and he says, in order that as a science, metaphysics may be entitled to claim, not mere fallacious plausibility, not being on top for a while as a philosophical school, but insight and conviction, we have to do something. And this happens through a critique of reason. If we do, in fact, engage in a critique of reason, and it just so happens that at the time that he's writing this, Immanuel Kant has a whole book called The Critique of Pure Reason out there, and he'll follow it up with, you know, Critique of Practical Reason and Critique of Judgment, providing us with a whole system over time, then we actually can have metaphysics as a science, according to Kant. And if we don't do that, no science, right? So before we look at what this critique and science would actually involve, let's skip ahead a little bit and look at what he calls dogmatic metaphysics, which is basically all the metaphysics that has been done up until that time. Oh, we could add to that skepticism, which is really a rejection of metaphysics that doesn't go far enough, and we'll see how we get to that. So he tells us that, why do we have to do metaphysics? So reason, as he says, had to have something, etwas bedürfte, needed to have something, desired to have something, we could even say, if we were looking at what he said before, because reason wants us to go beyond mere experience and perception, and even, you know, the scrutiny of the understanding, and go into thinking about reason and its principles themselves. We can't avoid for long the attraction of engaging in metaphysics. We have to have something. So what kind of something do we wind up with? So he says that it couldn't find anything better for its support. And then he tells us that critique stands in the same relation to the common metaphysics of the schools. Now, you could say, oh, scholasticism, medieval philosophy. Well, yes, but also Cartesian philosophy. Also, what's happening over in Oxford and Cambridge, what's happening throughout Germany. So it's not just the metaphysics of Aristotelianism and Thomism or something like that. It's also Cartesian metaphysics. It's also Lockean metaphysics. It's also Leibnizian and Wolfian metaphysics that is under the gun here. And he says that critique stands in the same relation to the common metaphysics of the schools as chemistry, a real science that has been developed, stands in relation to alchemy, not a real science, right? It's got principles. You can get books on alchemy, but it all winds up being not nonsense, but, you know, illusion when we get down to it. Same thing for astronomy and the astrology of the fortune teller, right? So what do we actually have here? He calls metaphysics done by the schools an old and sophisticated pseudoscience. And actually the term there, there's no pseudo, which means lying in Greek, right? It's Scheinwissenschaft, only apparent science. The illusion of science, which is what, you know, astrology and alchemy, according to Kant, and I think according to many people in our own time, really amount to. So what we've got here is, as he's going to call it, a false art, a vain wisdom, eitles Weisheit in German, right? And he tells us that all false art, all vain wisdom lasts its time. It endures for a while, but finally destroys itself. It shows itself as incapable of satisfying the real desires of reason, which is to have genuine, systematic, reliable knowledge, Wissenschaft, science. And he says something else that's very interesting here as well. Its highest culture, as it reaches its highest point, it also attains to its epoch. And epoch is perhaps a somewhat misleading translation. It's epoch of decay. It's Zeitpunkt ihres Unterganges. Untergang is going under, collapsing. Decay works for this. Zeitpunkt has the sense of like coming to a point in time. It could be an era, it could be an epoch. So we sometimes talk about like the modern era or the roaring 20s. Those could be a Zeitpunkt, but it's a little bit less of a, you know, long, long stretch of time. And so he says that this time has come for metaphysics appears from the state into which it's fallen among learned nations. So, you know, those participating in the Enlightenment, despite all the zeal with which other science of every kind are pursued, the old arrangement of our university studies still preserves its shadow. Now and then an Academy of Science tempts people by offering prizes to write essays on it, but it is no longer numbered among sound, fixed, established sciences. And let anyone judge for himself how a sophisticated person, if they were called a great metaphysician, would receive the compliment, which may be well meant, but is scarcely envied by anybody. So metaphysics, people aren't really that into it anymore. And he talks about this leading into skepticism. He doesn't use the term skepticism there, but we can read that back into it. And he tells us that the period of the downfall of dogmatic metaphysics has arrived, but we're far from being able to say the period of its regeneration has come by means of a thorough and complete critique of reason. Now, Kant does think that he's done a thorough and complete critique of reason. It's just not getting the audience and the recognition that he'd like for it so far, which is part of why he wrote the Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics. So he says, transitions from an inclination to its contrary pass through the stage of indifference, Gleichgültigkeit, right? Hey, it's all okay, it's all equal, equally not good, right? And then he says, this moment is the most dangerous for the author, but the most favorable for the science. Why is it most favorable for metaphysics as a science? When party spirit has died out, partisanship, people getting something out of being great metaphysicians, by a total dissolution of former connections, minds are in the best state to listen to several proposals for an organization, according to a new plan, which is what Kant views himself as having provided in his first critique, and will solidify with the second and third critiques, as well as other things. So let's talk about critique then. Backing up a little bit, he tells us, in part, what is the critique supposed to do? What is it supposed to provide? This is in the second paragraph. A critique of reason must itself exhibit the whole stock of a priori concepts. So not some of them, all of them. And you might say, oh, wait a second, Kant. You haven't actually done that. Because you've done it for pure reason, first critique, but you haven't done it for practical reason, second critique. It's okay. He's got them in his back pocket, so to speak, and he'll be exhibiting them later. So exhibit the entire stock of a priori concepts. He goes on, their division according to their various sources, sensibility, understanding, and reason, three different faculties that are interconnected and work with each other and can be arranged in a sort of hierarchy. Sensibility at the bottom, understanding in between, reason higher up than them, and, you know, really what can govern the rest of them. So that's two things. Together with a complete table of them, the analysis of all these concepts, right? So that's important as well. The possibility of synthetic cognition a priori by means of the deduction of these concepts, the principles and bounds of their use. And then notice the last part, all in a complete system. Not just a system, a complete system. And here we get to a really important feature that he is going to stress over and over again in this. If we're going to have a genuine critique, it's got to be all the way across the board. So he tells us a little bit later, metaphysics alone can with certainty bring to such completion and fixity as to require no further change or be capable of any augmentation by new discoveries. Why? Because reason has the sources of its knowledge in itself, not in objects and their observation, by which its stock of knowledge could be further increased. And here we see the difference, for example, as he's mentioned earlier, between bounds or boundaries, right, and then mere limits. So mathematics, we can keep on finding new discoveries about how numbers, quantity works, its application to space and stuff like that. We can kind of never finish with it. Metaphysics, we can actually, according to Kant, finish with it, at least in the general or the abstract. And so he tells us that when it has exhibited the fundamental laws of its faculty completely and so determinately as to avoid all misunderstanding, there's nothing more for pure reason to cognize a priori. There's even no ground to raise any further questions. Kant takes himself, at least with respect to pure reason in the first critique, to have done exactly that. Now, has he done that completely in the Prolegomena? No, because it is a Prolegomena. It's a much shorter work, it's presenting things in a different manner, right? But he says that he's thinking these prolegomena will excite investigation in the field of critique and afford a new and promising object, right? And so he says, I can imagine beforehand everyone whom the thorny paths of my critique have tired and put out of humor will ask me on what I found this hope. My answer, the irresistible law of necessity. Now, what is this law? You can't avoid doing metaphysics. You're inevitably led by this natural disposition into taking positions in metaphysics. Metaphysics is actual, but you want it to be a science, not a pseudoscience, right? Not dogmatic metaphysics, and you don't want to fall into skepticism. So he says, there will always be metaphysics in the world. Everyone, especially every reflective man, will have it, and for want of a recognized standard, will shape it for himself after his own pattern. What is been called metaphysics up till now cannot satisfy any critical mind, but to forego it is entirely impossible. So a critique of pure reason itself must now be attempted, or, now notice this very convenient phrase, or if one exists, investigated and brought to the full test, because there's no other means for supplying this pressing want. Right? So just so happens that, as I mentioned before, Kant does have a critique worked out that you can easily get your hands on, purchase, read for yourself. I mean, it's a little bit self-serving, but it's not self-serving in a bad way. Here, Kant's saying, look, I've got a critique available for you. You just got to actually read it, study it attentively. And that's very important, as we see in the next section, where he engages one of his critics who is not looking at it quite so attentively. There's one last thing that we want to touch on here, which is this discussion of analytic treatment of things. And he says that the science of metaphysics is not advanced because of analyses of concepts. You can analyze the concept of substance and accident. You can analyze, you know, other things like propositions, like sufficient reason or anything like that. But in analyzing, you're not actually advancing things. What we need are synthetic a priori concepts, propositions, judgments, cognitions, to go back to the terminology that he's been using this entire work. And that is indeed what the Critique of Pure Reason is supposed to be providing us, either with or with the possibility, the guidelines for deriving our self. So this is how Kant conceives of his project in the first critique and what he has to tell us about it in relation to the metaphysics that's out there, but really doesn't deserve the name at this point because it's at best pseudoscience that needs to be replaced by a real metaphysics that Kant thinks that he's paved the way towards. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.